Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Thursday, June 7. I'm Neil Stavem, and this is Faith Radio Mornings. You're in the Faith Radio Network. So glad to have you listening in, whether you're listening around one of our AM or FM frequencies, or you're listening online, myfaithradio.com, or on the app. We're just glad to have you on board this morning, and hope you slept well. Logan, I'm so good at sleeping, I can do it with my eyes closed.
Wow, congratulations. I was particularly good at sleeping in classes.
Sure.
Thank goodness there aren't any professors in studio to hear about that.
No, nothing like that at all. So I was thinking maybe it's, a graduation here. I mentioned about, graduation. It's where you're all in identical caps and gowns, and the speaker says individuality is the key to success. I don't know if you're maybe, as soon as school's out, you head out, do a little camping. Wondered about how is it that one careless match can start a forest fire, but it takes a whole box to start a campfire. Those are the sort of questions that we're going to deal with in the moments ahead. Coming up, Peter Capster is going to join us. He's a professor of a variety of things, and we don't actually know what he really does. Also, a little bit later this hour, Glenn Stanton from Folks in the Family is going to talk about a new Gallup poll about Americans supporting gay marriage. We'll deal with that and more. Coming up this hour. And yesterday, we mentioned yesterday, of course, was the anniversary of D-Day. And thinking about the 160,000 Allied troops landing along a 50-mile stretch of heavily fortified French coastline. If you've watched some of the movies of modern remakes of that event, it's almost beyond imagination. And we'll talk a little bit about it in the moments ahead. In fact, Peter was there, did some family vacation in France, and so had a chance to go to Normandy. We'll get his perspective on that in a moment. We're talking about Winston Churchill, one of the key leaders during that time. Churchill says success consists of going from failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm. Aren't you glad that this event, the Normandy invasion, was ultimately a success? It allowed more than 100,000 soldiers to begin the slow, hard slog across Europe to defeat Hitler's crack troops. More than 9,000 were killed or wounded. So 1944 on this date, there were a lot of people praying and hoping and trusting and anxious. And I hope that as you start this day that you are trusting, but you are also hopeful. And there's a song that's just come out a little bit a couple months ago from Matt Maher that just reminds us that when we look up, we look long, we can see God's hand at work. And there's a line there that says, "I see grace on every horizon." That's how we want to start today.
The friend we have in Jesus, east to west, my sins are gone.
Peter Capner with us this morning, and that's the walk-up music that Bill Arnold picked for you. I don't know if we can ever change that at all.
That one sticks, Neil, okay. Right there. I can't ever get away from that one. That's as good as it gets.
Peter Capner, of course, he's a professor of Christian ministries and practical theology, which, of course, some people would say, well, that's an oxymoron.
It's like freezer burn, right? Sure. I mean, it doesn't go together, sure. Exactly.
you and your family did some vacation in France early. You had a chance to go to Normandy.
Right? Yeah, we did. It was right at the tail end of our trip. It was quite the experience, Neil. We had spent 2 weeks. It was an incredible gift to go for that time. And I have to admit, I was a little bit on the fence because it was maybe a two and a half hour drive. Mm. We had been driving a lot with our young family all over France. And so we had one day that we could get to Normandy and just thought, do we want to get back in the car again and do this? And I will say I am eternally grateful that we did. It was just a phenomenal experience. I really didn't know all of what had happened historically. You sort of, you get it from Saving Private Ryan. You have some lessons in school, of course. Maybe you've watched Band of Brothers. But to have stood on those beaches, it was a very sacred and sobering and beautiful and hard experience all mixed together. It really was an incredible time.
Yeah. Did it impact your kids in maybe the same way it did you?
It did. And they do this incredible museum at the Omaha Beach, where one of the beaches where the Americans landed. Of course, the British took a couple other beaches, and the Canadians took a beach as well. But we went to Omaha Beach, where they have the 10,000 tombs of the soldiers who fell at that beach, and they have this museum that it just takes you through all the history day by day of what happened leading up to the events. They have pictures and stories, and my kids and I, we went into a little theater that they have there that told these narratives of the young men in this particular case, that what their backgrounds were. Some of them were university students, some of them were farmers, and it really gave you a sense of the humanity of this, that these young men that were walking into battle, and then they would show a picture of their gravestone at the end of each of these narratives. And so you could see real human beings and the fear and the courage and the whole mix of everything. And so my kids were very moved. They hadn't experienced something like that before.
You know, there aren't many, I guess, opportunities for young men and women to really do something of eternal and really powerful significance, right? I mean, summer's out. It's like, okay, what are we doing in the summer? We're going to be playing video games. But, I mean, these young men paid the ultimate sacrifice for something, a cause much greater than themselves.
They did, and there were so many that would talk about and articulate that they were willing to do so. And so to be, again, at those beaches with my 18-year-old son, who, of course, was the age of many of these young men who set out from the beaches of the UK, and in a couple of days, they were now at the beaches of France, and they didn't even know, perhaps, what was all waiting for them there, and yet they kept putting foot after foot, step after step, and they decided to take these beaches. It was really an incredible and moving experience.
Yeah, I hope that it's on my list of places to see.
So yeah, very worthwhile.
Look forward to that. So, well, we want to talk about something even less important. We're going to talk about Warriors, but maybe the Golden State Warriors.
I mean,
you're a basketball fan, and I'm not sure if we can tie this in some sort of spiritual thing. Maybe not, but I, of course, I didn't stay up because I was working early this morning. But so it was. I don't know if people love basketball. I mean, this is, you know, it's the same two playing again, but it is amazing level of competitiveness, isn't it?
You know, it really, it's a fascinating matchup between these two teams. And I did have the chance to cover the NBA for about 10 years and got into the locker rooms and met the players. And it was really, there's been this amazing shift that now we're seeing the results of, where there's these building of super teams. There's just recruiting of free agents. And so you see one team in Golden State that they all gathered at the Hamptons a couple of years ago, and they tried to recruit Kevin Durant as this last piece, and they did. And you compare that super team against sort of this one-man gang in LeBron James in Cleveland, who went to his hometown and this impoverished and sort of setback hometown, even from 2008-09, all the economic things that had happened. Cleveland's still trying to recover, and you have this one man who's had such an impact in the state of Ohio, trying to lead his team yet again against the super team. And there's quite a bit of drama in that at this moment. It's pretty fun to watch.
Well, it's interesting that even while this drama is going on, and maybe it's all predetermined, who knows where it's going to go, because it's what the Warriors won.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I think
spoiler
we can safely
alert.
Say it's,
I know.
Yeah, okay. I think we can safely say this one's over at this point. So, yeah.
But even so, the president managed to sort of garner attention by having both Steph Curry and LeBron James talking about visits to the White House. So the president seems to always manage to stay front and center, doesn't he, in the news?
He does. And he has even said it from moment one during the campaign trail that basically that he needs to drive the news cycle, positive, negative, whatever it is. But it sort of drowns out all other voices, and you're left with that voice. And that happened here again with the Eagles and the controversy of going to the White House. And now we're in a situation of asking questions about, is it really important to get to the White House? Yeah. What does this mean? You know, Neil, I think the one side of it is that as a country, we used to be able to take our differences and still set them aside temporarily to be able to celebrate something together. And so we may, as Vikings fans in Minnesota here, may really be disappointed when the Packers win the Super Bowl, for example. But you watch them historically when they would win and celebrate at the White House. There was at least a part of you that could enter in and perhaps celebrate on some level. At least that was the idea, that you really go at it as hard as you can. But at the end of the day, it's our commonality that holds us together. But now it's our differences that we can't even see the commonality anymore is what it feels like. And there's good points on either side of the conversation, right, in terms of patriotism, in terms of what the president is advocating for, in terms of what Steph Curry and LeBron James. You can see points on either side. But we don't really rally around those. We really are more celebrating the differences in some divisive ways.
Do we need to come up maybe with a new definition of patriotism? Because is patriotism, I mean, does the president get to decide who comes, you know, to the, I guess he can invite anybody to the White House.
Right.
But is there like sort of a litmus test for patriotism now?
Well, patriotism is defined as sort of a vigorous support of one's country. And so we're talking about what the commonality between people like Steph Curry and LeBron James and President Trump is, the commonality of our citizenship as Americans. And so if we started there, then maybe some conversation would be helpful. But it feels too often like it's a power struggle about who's going to control the direction of things. And we're using the White House now as a place of controlling the direction. And it's understandable, I suppose, on one level, but it's, I think, very divisive on the other from both sides of it.
Well, speaking of controlling, and talking about controlling the news cycle, we're going to talk about something that occurred in the news and some reaction to it in the moments ahead. Peter Kapsner is a professor at the University of Northwestern in Christian Ministries and Practical Theology, and he's our guest here on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll take a break, 17 past the hour, and more just ahead. Past the hour, Peter Kapsner in on Faith Radio Mornings with me here, Neil Stavem. And we're talking about what's going on in the news. Recently, of course, Supreme Court handed down a decision in favor of a baker in Colorado. We're going to react a bit to that. But in the process of reading about some of the reactions, I thought of Neil Postman, that classic book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business. It really should be must reading, no matter whether you're a student or not, if you just want to understand culture a little bit. Here's a quote from Neil Postman. He says, in America, everyone is entitled to an opinion, and it's certainly useful to have a few when pollsters show up. But these are opinions of a different rotor than from 18th or 19th century opinions. It's probably more accurate to call them emotions rather than opinions. So what's happening here is that television is altering the meaning of being informed by creating a species of information that might properly be called disinformation. And he says, I'm using this word almost in the precise sense in which it was used by spies in the CIA or KGB. So disinformation doesn't mean false information. It means misleading information, misplaced, irrelevant, fragmented, or superficial information. Information that creates the illusion of knowing something, but which, in fact, leads one away from knowing. He says, in saying this, I don't mean to imply that television news deliberately aims to deprive Americans of a coherent, contextual understanding of their world. I mean to say that when news is packaged as entertainment, that is the inevitable result. And, of course, we can add not just TV, but now all social media. Peter, I mean, we're seeing people, whatever the news story, whatever the news cycle, everybody is reacting continually, and that becomes the narrative.
It really does. What a spot on quote about how our thinking has been defined and is so often driven by really short sound bites or what's trending on social media, just bits of information that then drive the conversation. And certainly it's one of the things we talk about in my classes quite often is what are we currently thinking about any given issue, whether it be about sexuality or economics or war or whatever it is? And what we find in class is, I think, and I get subject to it too, is The stats are that only 3% of the time do we get past the first page on Google when we're looking for information. And so there's this Postman mentioned this idea of superficiality of our information. And so we might have a question, and instead of really doing the research around it these days, we quickly Google it. We maybe hit the first one or two links. We think we have a full understanding of the situation, and then we move into conversation from that place. And we have to spend a lot of time in class saying, what does it mean to explore the biblical text on these things and really deeply? And that might take hours or weeks of class. We also look at history. We look at tradition. We look at how people have thought about these things throughout different kinds of cultures besides just 21st century American culture. We explore the sciences. And students, it almost like we have to exercise our brain in a way that we don't often anymore, as we're just being hemmed in by whatever's happening on the quick news bite these days.
Well, it's so quick. And, yeah, if it's hours and weeks, I mean, we're well past that already. I was thinking the Supreme Court decision, Folks in the Family came out with just a little video summary of that. And so I watched that the other day, and then there were postings, reaction to it afterwards. And several of them were things like, you know, this wasn't very loving. And suddenly the narrative has sort of changed again. Talk a little about, you looked at some of those reactions. What did you think?
Yeah, in terms of the baker and the situation relative to being willing to service the same-sex couple we end up with this idea of love, I think, as we reduce it down too often to the idea of whether I approve or I disapprove of something. And so we talk often again in class that approval and love are not synonyms. Those are very different things. And it's understandable on one level, because I think many of us are looking for approval. We're looking for people to see us and to pay attention to us and to acknowledge that maybe we even exist and aren't reduced down. And so we're looking for this approval all the time. And when somebody does that, it can then feel like love. But love in the biblical text is a very different idea than approval. And love in the Bible is the idea that I desire the wholeness and the completion and the perfection of all things, and I'm willing to lay down my own life for that. I'm willing to give everything for wholeness. And so I don't unconditionally love in the sense that I unconditionally approve of all things. And I think that's where we get confused, right? So often is that unconditional love and approval feel like the same thing. I can unconditionally love, meaning that I desire your wholeness, even if I don't approve of all the things that are going on in a given moment. So, Neil, if you were deciding all morning to lie to me, for example, I wouldn't approve of the lying, but I can unconditionally love you, meaning that I desire wholeness in this situation. And that's where we have to kind of parse this out a bit.
I have to change my entire strategy now, but now
yeah,
that
you've
found me
out.
You.
So, yeah, sure. Confront you in public like that. It just chastise you, Neil.
So can we... Caleb Kaltenbach was on with Bill the other day.
Yeah, loved to listen
on
to
the
him,
afternoon.
Yeah.
It was just you want to listen to that interview. It's powerful. But so can we as believers give acceptance? Does acceptance have the same weight as approval in the minds of someone that is longing for approval?
Yeah, I think that's the most common question I get in my sexuality class is sort of this idea. If I have a friend who has indicated now to me that they're same gender attracted or that they're whatever the conversation happens to be, the students will say, so what do I do? And there's almost this urgency, like I've got to change the situation right now. And I think we have to understand that what we're dealing with and so many of our young people, and I think all of us on some level, is when you haven't had the sense of approval, when you haven't had the sense that people are really for you in life, to then come at them immediately and say, what you're doing is wrong, it's not going to yield the kind of relationship and results moving forward. So I try to invite my students into the tension of what it means to enter into relationship long term and almost unconditionally so, in the sense that I'm in this relationship for the long haul, regardless if anything changes. I will walk alongside of you. I will be with you. But if you lead with you're wrong and what in your decision is wrong, you're going to drive away the person 100 times out of 100.
Yeah. And I think we put so much weight on approval. In fact, we disapprove of what each other's choices all the time. I mean, I don't like the sports team you're rooting for. I mean, or, you know, we don't want to go to this restaurant. You want to go to that one. I mean,
right.
Approval is doesn't have to be that elevated like it is, I think.
No, that's exactly it. But again, if we're living in sort of this deficit of it, then it's very difficult to have any kind of meaningful conversation back and forth, because we're always kind of internally asking the question, if I share my opinion, will you approve of it? But if I'm already anchored and if I know my sense of identity and my source and who I am, I can enter into opinion conversations and hold the tension that I love you, even if our opinions are different. And boy, is that a lost art these days.
Well, speaking of opinions, coming up here in about 10-15 minutes, so Glenn Stanton will join us. Glenn's from Folks in the Family, and he's going to talk about a new Gallup poll that suggests that Americans, the majority now, are supporting gay marriage. And Peter, I know you'll have opportunity to talk with him more about that, so we'll dive in that conversation in about 15 minutes.
That sounds great. That Gallup poll is stunning, so it'd be an important conversation.
All right, so stick around for that. Here it's 27 past the hour. Peter Kapsner with us, a University of Northwestern professor at Christian Ministries and Practical Theology, and he'll hang around here for the remainder of the hour. We've got Breakpoint coming up. John Stone Street has thoughts about work, the new revolution. We'll get to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. 32 past the hour. Faith Radio Morning's underway. Prince Rogers Nelson, born on this date in 1958, of course. The artist formerly known as Prince or something passed away here a couple of years ago. We were talking last hour about the issues of addictions and the opioid epidemic and all that. And, of course, Prince had a bad reaction to that and took his life. Birthdays today, we can celebrate Bear Grylls, 44, Man versus Wild. Are you a Man versus Wild guy?
You know, so,
You look kind of like you could be a wild man.
I've never met an outdoors that I'd like. Neil, I'm an avid indoors man, I have to admit on this one. Okay. Yes, climate control is my thing.
Sure,
so, yeah,
good.
For
all
sure.
Right, so never mind then.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
Right, so you're more of a Mike Pence guy. Mike Pence is 59 today.
Is that in terms of age or in terms of indoors?
No, just kind of, just sort of a staid, calm, you know.
I find myself way at peace when I'm indoors. When I'm outside, I am wildly agitated. So this is, very true.
All right, a couple of birthdays today. If it's your birthday, happy birthday to you. Thanks for tuning in. It's the 7th of June. And Peter, we'll be talking to Glenn Stanton here in a few minutes. We'll take a news break right now.
It's 37 minutes past the hour. You are listening to Faith Radio Mornings, and I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner. And in just a minute, we're going to be speaking with Glenn Stanton, who is the Director of Family Formation Studies, Focus on the Family. And he's going to comment on a real important survey that's come out from Gallup recently on trends within same-gender marriage. So look forward to that. We'll speak with Glenn in just a minute.
You can be certain that one day your kids will realize the uncertainty of life. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When I think about what kids view and hear today, it's no surprise that many kids entering adolescence are filled with questions. They're undecided about which path to take. They don't feel ready to face the world. And they're on the fence whether or not they buy into the stuff their parents taught them. The uncertainty can be overwhelming. Moms and dads need to be aware of this anxiety simmering beneath the surface. You have an opportunity right now to step in and calm a few fears. You can be one of the certain, predictable, and constant forces in your teen's life.
There's much more encouragement for parents from Mark Gregston online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org. That's ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Minutes to the top of the hour, and I believe, Logan, we have Glenn Stanton on the line from Focus on the Family here to talk about some recent research that's come out. It's real important in shedding light on where we are in some of these marriage trends. And so, Glenn, you're on the line. Good morning.
I am here. It's good to be with you this morning.
Yeah, appreciate the time out here. So are you out in Colorado, Glenn?
I live out in Colorado. I'm actually in Virginia this morning.
Virginia.
So out in the beautiful country, Shenandoah Valley in Virginia at a conference. So, yeah, good to be with you all the way from Virginia.
That's fabulous. So does that, Colorado, does that make you a mountains guy for sure? Or are you still maybe an ocean guy? I mean, this is one of those key questions that really define us, in terms of mountains or ocean, Glenn.
Sure. It's one of the most important. I grew up in Florida, so I am an ocean guy, but you know what? I'm a mountain guy as well. I have a hard time taking a position on anything.
Oh, so, Glenn.
Yeah. You caught me right in the middle.
I love that. Well, you know, there's real important, and just some of the work that you're doing with Focus on the Family. You're a director of family formation studies there. Can you just, what does that mean for you day in and day out? I mean, family obviously is a word that has changed quite a bit the last 20, 30 years in our country, but what does that mean for you day in and day out there?
No, well, you just hit it. I mean, in the last 30 years, with all the change on family at Focus, I get to study that. And I'm not a research nerd, really, but on this question, I really am. So for the ministry, and hopefully for the rest of the Christian church, I try to be the guy who studies this stuff, knows what's the good and the bad, what are the good trends, what are the bad trends. And then what are kind of sometimes the nuances in between that, you know, have good ramifications and not so good. So I read a whole bunch and I write and I speak. So a lot of it's just a research and educational position. And then I get to be on with wonderful radio folks like you and your audiences to share some of this research.
That's great. And I saw a couple of years ago that you were making a case in some of the videos that you have for the adherence to the traditional nuclear family, that the nuclear family really has maybe even more important role than we recognize today. Can you speak a little bit about your thoughts on the nuclear family, traditionally speaking?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first is the term the nuclear family. We think of that as referring to like the 1950s. You know, family that was all nice and neat and proper. But the term nuclear family actually comes from Aristotle, where he's talking about how society is built. And he says the nucleus of the community, of every community, is mother, father, children. And then outside of that is the extended family. And then when extended families come together, it creates a little village. And then out of the village, the city, and then the world. And so we need to know that, yes, marriage, bringing mother and father together, husband and wife, and them raising and loving and caring and providing for their own children, and then those children being influenced by aunts and uncles, grandmas and grandpas, things like that, is essential for every human culture. There is no culture that has found a way to succeed, to have low crime rates, to, you know, be productive economically, educationally, without strengthening the family and investing in the family. And so today, unfortunately, we just think, well, the family, you know, it'll just happen and all kinds of new families can happen and, you know, we can have a diversity of families. But the social science research shows us very clearly that every one of those quote-unquote new kinds of families have failed to provide the kinds of things our children need and that we need as adults and that our society needs. And so the nuclear family is critical. It's not just a conservative ideal or a traditional ideal. It is a human ideal, and God has put it within us to live and grow up in those kinds of families. And anybody that hasn't knows that they have been shortchanged. And so we need to know that for the coming generations.
Well, and that then takes us into this recent poll that came out in the month of May, in which Gallup has identified the significantly changing trends and perceptions of what constitutes a family, and now same-gender marriage families are being supported by 67% of the American people. And just 22 short years ago, that number was maybe 26, 27%. So we've seen a tremendous shift, not just in our country, but compared to what you've identified within history of the nuclear family. So say a little bit about some of the implications of this shift before we head to break.
Yeah, I mean, it's discouraging that we're seeing this, you know, increasing support for, I call them non-gendered families because, you know, they exclude male or female. But we need to know that that belief is like paper thin. People think, you know what, I don't want to be a bigot. I don't want to be a hater. So I might as well just get behind this. And it's oftentimes like, you know, people saying that they were voting for President Trump. You know, they don't want to admit that they take a different position here. But we need to know that it's paper thin. And two, that young adults who are supporting this, they're not as likely to support it when they start having their own kids, when they get married, when they start founding their families. So we need to know that what is happening today is not necessarily what will be happening tomorrow.
It's Glenn Stanton with us from Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family, coming to us from Shenandoah Valley in Virginia this morning. Glenn, appreciate the time. When we come back from break, let's pick up that topic a little bit further about the implications of the future relative to same-gender marriage. Thanks, Glenn. Well, just about 12 minutes before the top of the hour, and we are with Glenn Stanton, who, director of Family Formation Studies, gets a chance to spend his time and his work life researching family and our culture today, and also from the perspective of history. And, of course, we've seen some major changes. We talked just before the break, Glenn, about the shifting attitudes towards marriage, going from 26% support of same-gender marriage to 67% support in just the past 20 years or so. If you can look into your crystal ball and just give in your sense of research and history and the trends, where do you see this headed over the next maybe 10 years or so, Glenn? Where does this take us into the future?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. I mean, first of all, I'd like to just address the acceptance issue. And we look at two wrong things, if you will, that were outside of God's plan. That is the divorce revolution that started in the early 70s and the abortion movement. And we have had 30, 40 years of both of those things. And it's interesting that young people are increasingly saying, you know what, divorce has been horrible. And that increasingly young people tend to be more pro-life, even if they're not quote-unquote conservative. That is because they've seen the track record of both of these things. And we need to know that in the same way, in terms of, you know, quote-unquote same-sex marriage, that as it gets a track record, kids being raised in these sorts of homes without either a mother or a father, they're going to see that, you know what, this wasn't what we signed up for. This wasn't the, you know, Jim and Frank next door getting married kind of thing. They're going to see the negativity, the downfall, the instability of those families. And so just like the divorce revolution, attitudes dramatically changed because they saw its fruit. With the abortion revolution, people saw its fruit and its negative fruit, its bad fruit. They're going to see the same thing with the same-sex family. So again, my line, my phrase is what's happening today in an idealism, if you will. They want it to work. They think it could be great. But on the ground, it's not going to give that positive sort of demonstration. And so we need to understand that. In a way, I call it like it's anti-reality, and it's like trying to push a ball under the water in the pool. There's only one way that it's going to go in time, and that's going to pop back up. And whenever we move away from God's rules, what he set up for us to thrive, and we move away from that, bad things are going to happen, and that's what has happened in the past, and it will continue to happen in the future.
Glenn, as we live in the tension then, as we're trying to see what the fruit that's born out of this current revolution that's taking shape, and as people that obviously are going to have our children that will, I'm sure there's many people listening that have had children come out and say that they are gay, or we have friends and family. How do we live in the tension of this in the meantime? While we wait as this whole thing plays out, how do we walk alongside of one another where we live in that tension where we're not necessarily approving, but we want to love and come alongside?
No, and that's exactly right. And one of my latest books come out of my experience trying to do that with the people that I debate, and it's called Loving My LGBT Neighbor, Being Friends in Grace, in Kindness, and in Truth. Loving My LGBT Neighbor, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. And it seeks to walk that line between caring for other people and accepting everybody, not everything about them, but accepting them as people, but also standing for truth. And I say it this way, basically, is when you're dealing with the person, always engage them in grace. Jesus in John 1:14, it says he came to us and lived among us from the Father, and he lived full of grace and truth. Always treat the person in front of you with absolute grace and kindness, but always deal with the issue with uncompromising truth. And many times we have to ask our friend, can I love you? Can I care for you? Can I be your friend? And will you allow me to hang on to my conviction of what sexuality is and is not? And that's a very reasonable proposal because, you know what? I want to be your friend, and I'm willing for you to be able to believe what you believe. I may not agree with it, but we don't agree on all kinds of different things. And so always love the individual, but also stand firm on truth. Now, when it's our children, that's a very, very difficult thing because we are the parents. We have to guide them. And I think, I mean, in a sense, that's such a complex issue that we really can't go into it here. But it is important for parents to understand it is fine for you to love your kids when they say that they're, you know, either transgender or same-sex attracted. And a lot of times that's just confusion on their part. But we need to know, just like we would say to our kids and have said to our kids, there's nothing that you could do that would make me love you any less. We need to know that that applies to this, but it doesn't mean necessarily that we accept it. Just like if our heterosexual kids, you know, were cohabiting, you know, we wouldn't say, oh, that's fine. But we understand that I can still love you, I can still care for you, and I can disagree with what you're doing. And we have to find some sort of reasonable life in the balance there.
Talking with Glenn Stanton, the Director of Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family. And Glenn, you know, we spend a lot of time, it seems, as believers, at least at times, talking about the things that have gone wrong. But there's a flip side of this, and my students in class will often say, well, you know, we really failed in having the traditional nuclear family, male and female marriage. And so can you speak to the flip side of the importance of really working on the male-female marriage and what it means to really bring that to light? What's the beauty and wonder that we're called to in male and female relationships here?
Well, it's interesting. Just like you said, your students, I mean, young people are not celebrating the fact that the family has not been working like it should. They have lived in it. They have grown in it. And they want, when you talk to them, they want a lifelong marriage. They want happiness. They don't want the kind of failure that they've seen too many of their parents take. And I think it's this, for our older listeners, I think one of the great ways is to kind of skip a generation of their parents, you know, your own kids, and go to the younger kids and mentor them and say, you know what, we didn't do it perfect, and we may not be cool and hip and know what the current music is, but we know how to do marriage. And we would love, if you want to learn how to do marriage, and not perfectly, there's no marriage that is perfect, but if you want a cheerleader, a coach to come alongside of you and encourage you, help you, give you advice, help sort out problems when you think it's completely hopeless, this intergenerational mentoring, if you will, grandparents mentoring the grandkids, if you will, and I'm talking about grandkids that are, you know, coming of young adult age. Do that at your church, older couples. Talk to your pastor and say, can we on a Sunday night just say, we're going to have five older couples that have been married 40 years or more, and they're just going to give marriage advice to anybody who wants to come. There would be people flooding that room to get that kind of advice. And it really is, in a way, that easy, just connecting couple to couple and encouraging, giving advice, giving wisdom, because these couples married 40 years or more, they are PhDs in marriage. They may not have the lab coat, they may not have the title, but they do have the title. I've been married 40 years. We've made this work. You know, they have a lot of expertise and a lot of wisdom and insight to pass on to the next generation that desperately, desperately wants marriage and the nuclear family and, you know, family cohesion and happiness there.
Glenn, it's such important in a sort of retirement culture to invite our grandparents to consider investing the remaining time of their lives into the next generation. It's such an important word for our culture today. Appreciate your time this morning, Glenn. Enjoy your time in Virginia and look forward to speaking with you again soon. We've got 4 minutes before the top of the hour. Take a short break and wrap up the show.
couple minutes before the top of the hour. And Neil, you threw me into the host chair here this morning. You kind of chucked me into the deep end of the pool. And
I did.
I suddenly feel like smarter and faster and stronger and more spiritual. I didn't know that you were holding out on me like this, Neil.
We know you could do it. I was thinking as I was listening to you that it was on this date in 2008 that sportscaster Jim McCabe died at age 86, and he was known for delivering that line, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
Oh, man.
Now, I'm not sure which, you know, which...
There was probably parts
of
both.
It's a good combination. Like, most of life, it's a combination of both, is it not, Neil?
And today, I think today's show was a good example of that, a little microcosm of life.
It really was. It really was.
Hope you have a great day today, and join us again tomorrow for Faith Radio Mornings here on the Faith Radio Network.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.